As part of a grant to document the founding of the Cedar Mill Library over 35 years ago, this is another in our series of recordings. In this recording, we hear from Georgie and Jack Thurber, two individuals who were instrumental in getting the Cedar Mill Library up and running. Through their work on the board, the early library newsletters, the mess, and many other activities, we gain many insights on how the library got started. In listening to the stories about the library's founders, it is evident that the health of the library is intricately linked to the efforts of its volunteers. With that in mind, we would like to invite library users to get involved in the Cedar Mill Library Association to help shape the library of the future. More info can be found at the website library.cedarmill.org.
So can you tell us your name and a little bit about your family, maybe how long you've lived in Cedar Mill and what initially brought you to the area?
My name is Georgie Thurber. What brought us to Cedar Mill was Jack had accepted a job at Esco Corporation as advertising manager, so we were looking for a house, and we'd heard the Beaverton School District was very good, and we had two young children, a four-year-old and a six-year-old, so we wanted to put them in a good school, so we looked around the Cedar Mill area, found a house on a quiet cul-de-sac within walking distance of Cedar Mill School, and settled in Cedar Mill.
Okay. About what year was that?
1971, October 71.
And so that mainly the schools, or what was appealing?
Yeah, it was. I knew the couple that we bought the house from that we finally decided on, and we liked that area, partly on a cul-de-sac. I know our kids always had a lot of fun riding their bikes on a private street, and I don't know if you pay a premium for it, but I got the house at a pretty good price. He's a guy that I worked with down at Esco. And he told us all about our neighbors, and everything worked out just fine. Neighborhood with kids.
Okay, great. And she introduced herself.
Jack Thurber.
Okay. So can you tell me a little bit more about what life was like back in the early 70s here in the neighborhood?
Well, they required that they have lanterns on the back of all the carriages. And we had to dig our own well. The 70s weren't much different than the 2000s in Cedar Mill, because it had pretty much developed to where it was going to go. There were a few fill-in lots around and that sort of thing, but big lots, and it was airy, and we used to be able to see the Coast Range. All the trees grew up. But bigger trees and a bigger mix of people, I think. We were on a street that had families with a lot of young kids. Well, some of those couples are now the age that we are, and some have moved away, and it was a great mix, a great demographic mix. At the time, I think that we're fortunate that Cedar Mill had a demographic mix that was aimed toward the welfare and the future of children, and I think that a lot of the people that we got involved with early, and we'll be talking about that, were people that were very much community-oriented but family-oriented. And if they had selfish reasons for wanting a library, more power to it. Those are the kind of people that really formed the backbone of the early adopters. Mm-hmm. So
it was a quieter area, of course, at that time, because you didn't have Cedar Hills Boulevard all the way through, and fewer housing developments and things like that. And then
didn't have six lanes, turn lane, a lot of traffic lights to help us with our driving.
Yeah. So, from your knowledge, how did the idea of forming a library in Cedar Mill come about?
Well, we're neighbors with Alan and Muriel Van Veen. Our property butts out back onto their acreage where they have vegetable garden. So we became friends, and we'd get together in the evenings and so forth. And the 7-Eleven store that was next to the Van Veens was put on the market for sale. And we were talking one night about, what's going to happen to this? And someone, I believe Jack, said, well, we certainly don't want a muffler shop there. And Muriel said, what we really need is a library. And we thought, yes, we need a library. And from there... Yeah.
Those were just about Muriel's exact words. And we just, the four of us, just we bought into that in a hurry.
Yeah, and you belong to CPO.
At that time, the state of Oregon had a law about land use planning, and whatever you think about that, one of the results of that was that they either mandated or allowed for community planning organizations in all over the state, and it gave them a voice with this new law. It also gave ostensibly neighborhoods and areas a chance to give some input as far as planning of their community. And out of curiosity, I joined that organization, but I was looking around for people that might be interested in a library in this area, because Cedar Mill, as such, was not a cohesive community like it is now. Had several influences, the library being one. We feel like we're more of a community. But from this intersection down here, it was 5 miles driving to the Multnomah County Library in Portland. It was 5 miles driving to the Beaverton Library, and it was a vast wasteland. And our kids were voracious readers, and you know, most of the little kids around here were. And a lot of people thought in terms of what it would do for their children, as I said.
So you met people like some people in the community had been thinking about a library, you know, sort of thought we need a library.
Right.
Judy Ackerman was one, and I think Osterman's.
She was a librarian at one time, a school librarian, I think.
And Osterman's. Did yeah, Kurt belong to yeah. CPO?
Yeah.
And so did Gary
and
Peterson.
Gary the Petersons belonged to that. But I was cherry-picking. I very frankly, and I told them about it later, when I found out there were so many people involved, I just kept going to the meetings and inquiring. They formed a committee, CPO committee, to talk about it. Well, committees talk, you know, and they get a lot of talking done, and it's nice, and you know, you drink a lot of coffee, but it was not that committee that we were working with for a library. I mean, we were focused. I took those people, and I said, come with us, and so they were some of the really the innovators that came up with all the ideas that would make it possible for us to do a library. The first board of directors was selected by Alan and I as being representative of some of the leadership and voices in the community. There was Otis Bales, Alan, myself, Kurt Osterman, friend of ours, and he had public information PR experience as a Forest Service PR guy. There was the, and then we wanted to do a little networking, and so we invited the Don Schick, who was principal of Cedar Mill School, to be on the board, and let's see, who else was, I'll think of it later. We'll give her full credits, matter of record, and I don't have their names right in front of me at the moment. But we put together a group that would have continuing interest. It wasn't just a flavor of the month for anybody.
Right.
And we were never small in our thinking. I don't know if we presumed that there would be a meeting room upstairs, but we were thinking of a lot of things, which I might throw in right now. One of the things we might do as a library is have a senior center in conjunction with it, or, you know, lots of senior activities.
Uh-huh.
That's the only thing that never came about from our early dreams, but there are things that seniors can participate in, you know, in the classes and that sort of thing. So we include them, and maybe it's better that they're included as a mix rather than isolate them.
Well, before the board got really organized, and we have the ice cream social, and
yeah.
Fred, a guy by the name of Fred Greger, joined the group and planning and helped spearhead the
yeah.
ice cream
about
social.
What year was that?
74.
Okay.
Maybe, excuse me, wait a minute. No, because we incorporated early. And we had a board of incorporators, which was the board of directors, and started the paperwork activity in late 74 through 75, getting nonprofit status and
okay.
a tax exempt status and a tax number and a whole lot of things. At the same time, we were enlisting people who were interested and looking for a place for the library, and that's a different story in itself, but that will come up a little later. But the Ice Cream Social was one of several community contact activities that we had. At that time, inviting them to bring a book and have ice cream and hear about plans for a new library and share your thoughts. It was kind of a committee of the whole. Everybody is part of the planning committee tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Give us all your ideas and your books, and we're going to collect books until we open our doors somewhere. Well, this was all happening up at that day school up on Take Care School, 107th and Cornell, right behind the mechanic shop there. That's where that 7-Eleven had been. It was not a good location for 7-Eleven, and they were selling their property, and we were looking for a way to buy it and have a library there. Well, it wouldn't have been any better location for a library. We would have been small. Eventually, we would have been looking for a place. And having Otis Bales on the board was it was a lucky choice. I mean, he was a good man, and we knew he'd be interested in the library, but he eventually saw that we were up against a brick wall. We all saw that as far as buying it. Having a major capital campaign in this community would have been a bigger bite than we could chew at that time. And he offered the possibility of space here. Well, would you be interested in the shopping center? Said I might have a space and I can give you a good deal on rent, which he did. He's a highly honored man, and I don't mind telling you that he was very generous. And we got that space over there where the little lab is across the parking lot from present day. We got that space for half of the commercial rent at the time. And he said, it's not just, it's permanent as long as you have the library here. And then later, as you know, we came up here and then we expanded, et cetera. But that first space was extremely important to us. So that was our beachhead.
Yeah. What were the other businesses in the shopping center at the time?
Well, the other business across the breezeway there was Bales Thriftway, mm-hmm. where Walgreens is. That was all Bales Thriftway grocery there. And, excuse me, there was a barber. Al's been there since they built the building around Al's barbershop, I think.
Dr. Wong, the dentist, was on the corner.
Dr. Wong was around the corner, down west of where that lab is. Mm-hmm. And, the lady that does sewing and repairs and the pet people probably were there at the time. There was an insurance agency, maybe not the same one. I believe on the corner where the auto parts... What was there? I don't know. They didn't tell me I was going to have to remember all that.
That's okay. I'm just trying to paint a picture in my mind.
Yeah, there was
a little cafe there where whatever it is now.
There's one now. There always has been.
Okay.
And different.
It's sort of stayed
pretty
the
similar,
same.
Yeah.
Beauty
it
shop's
is, yeah.
still there.
Bales needed to expand, which they did by developing that land across that they owned and or maybe bought some of it at that time. But then this the space where Walgreens is became a couple different things after that.
So what year did the library start down there?
January 13th, 1976 is the day we opened our doors down there.
And then at what point did we move up to the building we're in now?
I don't remember that
don't
date.
Remember that. Okay.
Yeah. I've been there since day one, but I didn't write down all the dates.
Okay.
And it was a... an important date, definitely, up here. It allowed us to become more.
Should be in the bylaws.
Yeah, I'm sure we can find it.
Yeah,
and the newsletter's a good place to get a capsule of all that history.
Yeah. What was up here then when the library first opened?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, the Cornett store.
Rogers.
Rogers.
Yeah, it was a Rogers
Rogers
store.
Yeah.
Okay.
And not the whole space. I've forgotten. There were some other things.
Yeah, there were some other things here.
The art studio or whatever it is... was in this line of buildings, but may have been up closer to the street. I don't know.
Okay.
But anyway, there were mainly Rogers was in here. Yeah.
Okay. So you said you talked a little bit about where you wanted it to go, and you imagined a lot of things that it would become. Did you imagine that it would look like this back then with a branch library?
It's wonderful.
No, not necessarily. I wouldn't have predicted, none of us would have predicted a branch library because we were small. We called ourselves community library on purpose, so there'd be no confusion about whether or not this was owned by the government. This is a do-it-yourself project, and one of our early presidents made the mistake of saying, well, we've come from being a mom-and-pop library to... And I called him up short on that, not publicly, but then privately. I said, we've never been mom and pop. You look at the people that started this library, and none of these people were mom and pop type people. And I have great respect for that because my dad was a small-time grocer, supported his family with a mom and pop store, not the AM/PM kind of store, the neighborhood kind of store, like in the old days. And I said, we've always had big dreams. Don't ever say that again. He didn't. But the dreams were big of having a library. We didn't know what satellite things might happen, and that's wonderful. It's like Christmas every time something good happens, like branch libraries. We're in the branch library business now.
Yeah.
And we're in the business of helping someone like Aloha go through some steps that might help them. Here are the kind of people that we sought out, and here are the kinds of hurdles and things we went through in the early days.
Yeah.
I haven't yet volunteered to help them. I don't know if they're even asking, but there's a target for us right out there.
Yeah. So how did the idea of forming a nonprofit come about, and why did you go that route?
Well, for a practical matter, we felt that being a nonprofit, a 901c3, would bring in more donations, because we were going to be dependent on donations at first, and very soon we found out, well, there's money out there to be asked for, and we're writing grants. And I wrote a grant to the Tech Foundation, got $1,000 the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I think being a nonprofit helped there. But I think, I don't know what we were thinking, except that I think we kind of, I shouldn't say this out loud, I had gone to the county, one of the commissioners, and talked to him about what interest does Washington County have in opening a branch library in our area. There is, I guess there were no, I didn't know at the time, there were no county libraries, but I was surprised at that, and the county had no interest in libraries, and in a very friendly way, parted company. And I kind of wanted to fly in the face of government and say, well, the government's not going to get any tax money from our operations. We're not going to be accused ever of being a business. We are going to be a public service library.
Okay.
And we'll set our own terms. Thank you.
So knowing that the Washington County Cooperative Library Services did start about the same time.
A little after our initial year and a half of formation, but yeah.
It's interesting that you would say that based on
knowing what was your name?
What was her name?
I've got her name in here somewhere. A woman was looking at the possibility of a cooperative kind of library system. She didn't know for sure what it was going to be. She didn't know what it looked like, but she looked at this, and she was a resident of this area, but it looked like this was a perfect area to be thinking about. Putting libraries in the area together as kind of a cooperative group. And there were city libraries, and there were a couple of, one was a club library, I don't know, over in the West Hills somewhere. I'm sorry, ladies, I forgot your name. That was a good one, and I don't know where they are today, but I think that helped a lot of the small libraries. It helped us because it put us in touch with other libraries. Mm-hmm. And I think we'd already made kind of a connection with Hillsborough Library, but now all of us had connections with each other,
right.
Not just at the librarian stage. They all kind of knew each other because they wore the same cloth, but get together to work on common goals.
Yeah, and didn't we get some shelving from Hillsborough Library?
Yeah, it's an independent matter. We went to Hillsborough, and no, we didn't. We heard that, Hillsborough was moving into a new building, and I guess we sort of went hat in hand, and this wasn't me this time, but said, well, have you got anything that you're not going to use in your new building that we could use? Well, yeah, the shelving that we used for years was from there, as well as some that was built by some of our own members and that sort of thing. But Harold Kidby was the guy that painted all that. It's nice wood, solid wood stuff, but it had been painted once or twice, and so he very carefully painted it with little help from Sue Peterson on color schemes and that sort of thing, and it was put in place lovingly, and now it's sort of, I don't think we have any of it around anymore. We may have shared that with another library along the line, because it wasn't as efficient as what we use now.
Right.
And we make really good use of our space with our tall stacks.
But so there was never any talk of being a part of a, like, Beaverton or Hillsborough Library or anything like that?
No, okay. Not interested in Beaverton, not interested in Hillsborough. We had our own identity as Cedar Mill.
Right.
Kind of proud of it. We're out here in the unincorporated Washington County, but we are Cedar Mill.
Okay.
And it's a matter of pride, too. You got me on that one. You finally dug it out, didn't you?
So you talked a little bit about some of these, but what were the main obstacles that you ran into, and how did you guys resolve them in the beginning?
Yeah, what do you think?
When the 7-Eleven building, when that didn't work out, we're thinking, what? But then Otis stepped in and resolved that. We've always had people volunteering, help set up, help do this, help, you know. So it's always been a community sort of, yes, we want a library, let's do this. Sort of thing.
Yeah, it's a great community volunteer effort. It just, anytime, maybe there was something that went on once a year, these people would show up, plant sale or something. The mess, it was our rummage sale.
Miscellaneous, et cetera, super sale.
Yeah. I named that. I can take the blame for a few things.
Okay.
So I don't mind.
We'd have that.
I thought it was a terrible name, and
years?
They loved it.
We had that for quite a while. 10 years, I think it was.
Yeah, and always count on volunteers. Some just came out the day of the sale to help, to unload, load, do all that, and then you didn't see them again. They were here as library patrons, but there were specialty volunteers along the way that helped a lot.
We'd start in June collecting things. Probably the hardest thing was finding a place to store everything, but we did that. Start in June collecting from garage sales, asking people for stuff.
Where are some of the interesting places that you found to store it?
Well, over at one of the school, Beaverton School buildings and places like that. And then we'd have the sale outside all around down there, a two-day outdoor sale.
Yeah, between the two rows of buildings down in the
Jack would move some of the tarps. And people would come after we'd been having it for 5 or 6 years. This is really nice. This is fun. You should do this again next year.
Well, we're in our 19th year. Thanks for coming. Well, we moved it later, and we just stopped having it because
a lot of us workers, we went back to work full time.
Yeah.
Just wasn't.
Our kids could come home from school and find their own banana and start studying maybe, and the moms went back to work, and it just changed the flavor of it. But we still depended on the money. I mean, it wasn't, by that time we were getting some grants. We were, I don't know the first time that we got county money, but as soon as we were operating in some form and they saw that we were a permanent entity, this cooperative helped get money apportioned from the levy.
Okay.
And that helped a lot. And, of course, that's a mainstay of our budget now. But we still do the second edition, and that's an outgrowth of the mess, by the way.
Yeah.
We did a market study. We said, well, we can't keep doing this. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. We got to be the third largest rummage sale in the Portland area at one time. Over $20,000. The last year it was big. Georgie was chairman of it one of those times. Worked on it every year, but she graduated up to the seventh grade or whatever it is. after 7 years or something, became chairman. And it was going to be really tough. So we did a market study. Several of the volunteers went down and interviewed and looked over some of the thrift shops and other means of raising money by a thrift shop or a resale shop or whatever. And we put out a spreadsheet of 10 different, well, 9 different factors that we needed to consider: volunteer loyalty and enthusiasm. And then, that was the last one. That was the X factor, and it was all those things: loyalty, enthusiasm, numbers of people, and all that. And we used, I was a marketing guy, and I set up a grid where we figured out what their monthly income per square foot of space occupied, sales space occupied, was, and how much they grossed, and how, in other words, dollars per foot. It's a retail measurement. I wasn't retail, I was in industrial advertising. But we used that, and we looked at the ones that were most obvious to us to copy or to look to, I've forgotten who they were, and I could tell you, but it doesn't matter. There were some, usual names that you hear that are very successful thrift shops, and didn't use any of the giants because we weren't going to be a giant. We were looking for ones about the same size or a little larger. Mm-hmm. And we decided it was a go. So we went to the board of directors, asked for a loan, said we can do a thrift shop. And where was the first one? Oh, it was down at this end.
Yeah.
And this, it was not even in this building. It was the end portion that had been the art studio or something down here. Started that up, and it was pretty successful. We did the market study, we did a projection, a five-year projection of what sales could be expected. Mm-hmm. And I breathed a sigh of relief when they beat that all 5 years. But there was no mess, and people were asking for it, even though there was a big come in the shop. Well, when are you going to have your big rummage sale? Well, they decided to have a mini mess. And pretty soon the mini mess became quite large. It filled all the parking space out here and back along the side. But it reached a point in the shop, especially when the building was built and we moved down there, it reached a point in the shop where we were totally replacing and more, about doubling the income that the mess had brought in. And so they decided thrift shop only. And it's a lot easier on people's backs and time and space.
So what was it like for you running it that 1 year?
The mess?
Yeah.
Oh, it was great fun because I'd always done the housewares section. I always, priced and boxed and sorted. And Sue Jones and I would go out collecting stuff and things like that. And it's just sort of, if you don't want it, we'll take it. And there was a core group of us, Fran Harkins and Sue Peterson and Sue Jones and Jan Johnson, that always, and Jeanette Gill, that work the different departments. And so sometimes we team up with someone else to be the chairman, co-chairman, and so forth. Yeah, okay. It was fun.
So you've talked a little bit about gathering materials for the library. What were the hours when it first started, and how was it staffed?
It would have been staffed by volunteers. I wasn't involved with that because I think I was working full-time by then. Jack and I, when the library was down there, we would go with the family and do the janitor work, you know, empty the wastebaskets, vacuum with the kids.
Yeah, the first year we opened, I was president of the board, but I was also
the
assistant janitor behind Georgie and our two kids. I was janitor number four, and we went down and were janitors for a year in that small space.
Yeah, open, 54 hours a week. We tried to make, Jack said, you set a time, 10 till 8 or 10 till 5, and you keep it that way. You don't say 5:30, 9:30, blah, blah, blah. And you keep it the same so that people remember that it's always the same. And it was volunteer staff.
Yeah. At the time, we didn't know. I think Fred Greger and some of us informally talked about, well, how many hours should we be open? We've never talked about it. Fred Greger was the first library director, I guess you could say. He was not a professional librarian. The one we had on the board didn't want to be the director of the librarian. And he and another woman kind of set up the interior and did operations with the help of others, of course, that had experience. And we're talking one day, and, well, how many hours should we be open? And sat down and wrote them down. Well, this sounds reasonable, 10 to 8 on Monday through Thursday, and Friday and Saturday, 10 to 5, closed Sunday. And it added up to 54 hours. Well, that's great. At the time, we were open more hours than any library in the county.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yep. I think they looked at us for... It took
that's
a while for them to discover us, our hours, but I think that libraries are open more hours now. I mean, we're a service entity. Our only product is a satisfied patron.
Information.
Yeah. And a few other ancillary things, but a lot of ancillary things, but information and entertainment and... You tell me you're the professional. But that's what we were looking for. Did we find more? Well, we did, yeah.
And materials, well, from the first ice cream social, you know, people were invited, bring books, donate your books you don't want. And so there's never been a shortage of books, as we know from the book sale.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, yeah. And then when they got money, then they could start buying, you know, the nonfiction and other materials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were stored at that old 7-Eleven store. The Southland Corporation let us use that until we could get established just as a place of storage. It was never a library. What was the early library is probably something that, I don't know if it's on your sheet or not, but Georgia can tell you more about that. But that was, what was it? The Green what? Green Giant? Or
Multnomah County loaned us their bookmobile.
An old
for a while.
It was about a 1939 Chevy or
we
something.
We called it the Jolly Green Giant.
Jolly Green Giant.
And it was parked up, I've got a picture of it, it was parked up at the 7-Eleven for about 3 or 4 months.
At least, I'll have to look.
So that was the start, and people would volunteer to step.
It was on-site, it didn't go around anywhere.
That
was our first library, it was the Jolly Green Giant, and they got some cute pictures of kids walking up the steps to go into the bookmobile. But the books... And it couldn't hold all the books we had. We had tons and tons of books, literally, in that building when it came time to move and organize the books. Why? We didn't have space for anything else, but we made space. But it was it's been a flow ever since of donated books. People just have the idea, well, I'm going to buy a book, and I'm going to read it and pass it around to friends and family, and let's not lose it because I'm going to donate it to the library. That's my imagination, but I think some of that thinking goes on in this community.
I think you're right.
And then the equipment, the shelves and so forth, either came from other libraries or there were people like Harold Kidby who would build things. And
The first card file was built by one of our members. It may still be around somewhere, although we don't have any card files as such. What was his name? He lives over in Orchard Hills. That's why I got to have that membership list in front of me. I'll think of it later. We'll give him credit on this tape because he did a marvelous job. He is a craftsman.
So we talked a little about joining WCCLS. Do you remember how long after the library was open that occurred?
Well, let's see. We joined at the time it was formed. I mean, we were part of the discussion.
Yeah.
With her name's at the tip of my tongue, about the what she saw as potential for the community. It didn't have its name yet. In fact, it had two things. It had two organizations at one time. Now it's just the one. One was by the same people, essentially. One was the professionals and the librarians. And it was sort of like a board of directors, although they didn't have a lot of power, but they had the power certainly to discuss things and to eventually make some decisions about distribution of the tax money that was coming in. But the Washington County
cooperative, the co-op.
We were part of it from the start because we were incorporated already. We could join as a corporation with a goal, and we're, you know, they accepted us along with all the others who were already a going concern. It was very nice of them. Helped us, and I think in ways helped them too, because some of us were. Now Washington County had a libraries advisory committee at one time. I don't think they have that anymore, and I was on that for a while. I still don't know what they did or do. They didn't meet very often. It was just so that they, you know, wouldn't get left out, I guess. And we've long since flown past any consideration of the county advising anybody on libraries, but all those people that formed that, I think, are dead now, but wanted it. But I think the commissioners wanted to have some activity in them and some say maybe in the library activities of the area.
Yeah, it was Donna Selly.
Donna Selly was her name. Yeah,
the Washington County Cooperative.
And was she doing it for, I think she was developing a model that could be used in other communities on a professional basis. And I don't think we got charged for anything. I think that we could charge her for all the knowledge she gained. But she was very, very good about seeing down the road.
Yeah.
And seeing what was possible, both for her as well as for libraries. I mean, that's why she was in it.
So we talked about how you look on the library now, but was there any big surprises for you along the way?
Videos.
Oh, yeah. Go back to stumbling blocks, and there was a surprise. I was surprised that the library back maybe 20 years ago wanted to jump into the VCR, the video thing right away, and they're already discussing the big thing. Well, do we want beta or do we want the, you know, nothing had been resolved there. And I was on the board, and it came to the board then to consider. I said, wait a minute. I was thinking, wait a minute, but I said something like that. I said, we're in the information business, not in the entertainment business, and we're not in the business to compete with that video store down there and, you know, across from Safeway now, it used to be one. We're not competing with our friends and people that can help us, and those are the businesses around us. And I said a how-to video or self-improvement or, you know, historic things, whatever, that's fine. But if you're going to have Jaws or something, you know, the Hollywood entertainment, I don't think that's our place. I think that people can get entertainment in other ways, and now especially, of course, there's so many means of it. Speaking in 2011, the internet, TV, radio has improved a lot, not locally necessary. Well, yeah, and radio, all the means of all the media have improved. We didn't have to have all the media just because it was out there, and my argument at the time was twofold. Let's not compete with our friends in business, and let's not try to be what we are not. We're not here to entertain people. We're here to provide them with things that they can't get elsewhere, which is a sea of books. They can buy one or two a month, maybe. Some people can't buy them at all. And children, especially, are voracious readers. And let's make sure we have a gigantic children's department, which I'm glad to say is there today.
Yeah.
I think you were thinking also that the vision of a library should be to encourage people to read, not to be watched.
Yeah,
but
well,
it got voted. I mean,
well, yeah.
All libraries now have videos, DVDs.
The vote was 8-1 in favor. I was the dissenting vote. I lost that vote, but I think that that whole approach has been modified some. They never did get out of. We never did get out of having movies, but I don't know if the DVDs. I haven't even looked at the DVD section. I haven't had time, but. Are we still in the business of competing with theaters and the other DVD providers?
Well, there aren't too many other DVD providers left.
Well, not in that form, but,
right.
But, you know, but there are a lot of ways to get those movies, and online is the easiest.
Well,
the TV
I think,
contract is easiest.
Yeah, and the library also, they went for what you'd call nonfiction videos and education.
Yeah, there was always a good collection of that. Yeah.
Well, has your vision of libraries changed in the years since then? It was supposed to be more information and not entertainment, but obviously entertainment is something.
Well, it's all.
That's a big part of what we do.
Yeah, it's all together.
It's to bring people to the library and they have books here, you know.
Yeah, a marketing guy should have known that would be a magnet. It draws somebody in, even an illiterate, to come in to a library because we have tapes. Okay, I guess it's pretty harmless as long as, you know, we're pretty careful about the kinds of tapes we have. I don't think they've ever had any X-rated, for instance. At the time I was voting no on that particular issue, and I've changed my mind, I was also on the board of Oregon Literacy. Mm-hmm. And adult literacy was our theme, and it's really a tragedy that there are so many adults who can't read. And it's true today as it was then. All the efforts that are taken by this library, Oregon Literacy, all the other libraries, and childhood literacy is a real challenge because many of the children in schools come from families whose parents have never read to them. And I didn't want anything to get in the way of literacy in general, especially at that time my focus was not only this library, but adult literacy.
So, and we talked a little bit about Aloha. What type of advice would you or have you been giving to the folks out there about mobilizing to establish a library?
Advice. Mine is to grab by everybody you see on the street or at home, church, school, grab by the collar and say, here's what we're going to do. Do you want to be part of it? And if you see that their eyes light up, don't let go of them. That's
yeah,
the
I think,
answer.
Yes, getting the word out that we're going to be forming a library, getting the people who are interested, getting the word out.
Went to PTA meetings, had flyers, gave flyers to Boy Scout troops. We had social events, put out a lot of news releases. Kurt Osterman did, and then when he wasn't here, I guess I did because I was the guy that had some experience there. We got pictures in the paper, and there's some of it in the old scrapbook and all. And just talk about libraries. Don't bore them. Just let your excitement show. If you're not excited, don't talk to them. But we were all excited.
Okay. Well, that's the extent of our questions. Are there any other notes or things you want to add to the tail end of this? Anything we've left out?
Tell us about your children and their perspective.
Well, see, our daughter Andrea was probably about 8 when we... I'd have to look at dates and so forth. But she and Leslie Peterson would help, like at the mess. One year they did all the artificial flowers, which was to, you know, bundle them up.
Yeah, that was their department.
So that was their department. And they would help when we were cleaning down there. And I'll have to have her write up what she remembers. But she went on to become a children's librarian and has her MLS. And Brad just sort of came along and helped whenever we needed things.
So. Yeah, Brad, kind of quiet and smart and never complained about anything. If we asked him to come up to the library, that was fine with him because his sister, who learned how to read at 5, taught him to read. Start to read at 4, and he couldn't get enough books either, so he liked this place.
Yeah,
it must have been very formative for them to be around the library.
Well, I guess they kind of took it for granted because don't all families get involved in something like this? And they moved along rather smoothly. Yeah, and Andrew even helped shelve books after a while when she was about 9 or 10.
Yeah. So Brad went on to become a geologist. And they've always been good readers.
Oh, can I? Two or three things I'd like to throw in. We didn't do this on our own, and I think that's apparent from some of the Donna Selly and her work on a WCCLS and all of those things. We didn't try to do it alone. We sought mentors and advisors and smart people, and one of those smart people was, I think, his name was James, I think it was Burkhart. He was a Multnomah County library director downtown, and he was one of the people that I sought out. Tell him, this is what we think we want to do. It's early on. And he said, oh, that's wonderful, you know, and I'll be glad to give you any advice I can. He said, do you know that this library started as a private association, the Portland Library Association? A lot of people don't know that. And he dug in his files, and he pulled out the original charter to show me, and I should have asked for a copy. of the Portland Library Association, which later was pulled into a forward-thinking county environment. The county took that over because they needed branches. Well, they had branches, but yeah. I don't know how it happened, but you know, they sold them for a dollar, sold it for a dollar, and gave it to the county because it had the wider organization and also had a tax base to help them. And he said, that's a wonderful thing. He said, I wish I'd been back there then when they were going through that. It looks like you're going through it for your own community. And we talked about a lot of things. One of the things that he brought up, he said, well, we're going to be doing it all on volunteers. Later, we expect to hire a professional librarian to guide us and make sure we're doing it right. We have one on the board now, but she won't always be here and blah, blah, blah. You know, we'll have a staff, we'll have you. And and he said, I'm really jealous of you. He said, if I had volunteers doing anything in this library, I'd have a strike on my hands because all the county library employees are organized. They're all in the union. And he said, that's held us back a lot, but we... one thing that helps is we never even talk about the possibility of volunteers. He said, there's a Friends of the Library, and they have to do all their activities off-site. They're talking about a book sale. They didn't have the off-site book sale, but they go to different places to have a book sale. I think it's relaxed a little bit now, but their annual book sale,
I don't know.
Anyway, he was a great deal of help to me in those early days and to all of us, and I'd bring things back and we'd talk about it as a gang. Later as a board.
Jack and I did the library news for a good number of years. Put it together, and that's where a lot of the history is.
I think there is a full set somewhere.
Yeah. Well, they bound.
Yeah, we had a problem at one time. It was way early, and none of you were around, but there was kind of an us and them attitude, and I don't know where it started, between the staff, which was about four or five, and volunteers. And maybe they thought that volunteers should be blah, blah, and they felt they shouldn't be beholden to some faceless corporation. Well, they're always invited to come to the board meetings and all that sort of thing, and still owned by the association. But some of our material got filed rather deep at that time, and I think it all came to light, but there was a full set of this. We always made sure that, and we didn't start it. Fred Greger did with a couple of, we called it a newsletter just for purpose of history, a couple of information sheets. But the ice cream social, and they were passed around. And then this is volume two, meaning it's the second year of our existence, but January 76 was the first year we were in a library. And I did the masthead and helped Jan Johnson with layout and stories and that sort of thing for a few issues, and then her family situation was getting a little tight, so Georgie and I took over the newsletter for several years. And
was it just distributed here in the library? Or?
Oh, it went out to all the members.
It was a members-only thing. If you're a member of the association, you got it. And we felt that was our focus for a while. We want them, first of all, to know what's happening here because they're investing. And the other thing is that they were considered a body, had maybe 400 members, member units, families, and things early on. And we felt that, well, we're not getting 400 or 600 volunteers. They are our volunteer pool. And we wanted to continue to make that connection. We wanted to give names that they might recognize. There's always been a policy of any name that's in here would be in boldface in the early days of library news. And there are a few, I don't say gimmicks, but methods used to draw people in and the way the stories were written and just trying to keep up, not necessarily with all the news of what came into the collection this week, but what some of the activities are in the library, what's happening at Children's Story Hour, the summer reading program, the plant sale.
Sue Jones and the puppets.
Sue Jones organized a lot of the youth in the library and she was a puppet teacher, taught them how to make puppets and put on little puppet plays, and that was part of the children's program.
Christmas Story Creepy Kevin. Castle.
Yeah, Creepy Castle at Christmas. And they were a magnet for children, in addition to Story Hour, and building a good collection as fast as we could for children.
Did you produce the library news in your home, or did you have a facility here at the library?
At home, yeah. And for some things, I had
you'd have it print.
Outside.
You know, I'd type up the stories, he'd do all the pictures, he'd write the stories, mm-hmm. I'd contribute somewhat, and then we'd hold it up. label it, mail it out.
Yeah. None of that was the artwork, none of the text. I mean, that's all original, but the artwork, little guys doing something to illustrate summer reading program or something. I had a lot of fun with that. Mm-hmm. So
well, the mess ones are collectors on them. So.
Oh, mess promotion flyers. Yes. Yeah, I did the mess ones. And plant sale, I did most of that kind of stuff over the years.
But yeah.
Not with my own pen, just with my own Mad Magazine type mind. I just didn't. I had the ideas, I just didn't have the skills, but I could get right. the point across. Sometimes so crazy people didn't understand it. I apologize to all of you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming in and talking.
Well, thank
You're
you.
You're welcome.
It's been a good experience.